As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the end of season edition of the Athletic Support Your Podcast on Montreal Canadiens. I am Marc-Antoine Godin with Arpin Basu. Arpin, we experienced quite an evening in Tampa Bay last night. First and foremost, let me just start with that. How did you think it was? I mean, did the whole atmosphere, the Amalie Arena, the Lightning winning the Cup?
Well, you know, I think we should share a bit of an industry secret with our listeners. So, first of all, yeah, the Tampa Bay Lightning have always done an excellent job of game presentation. I thought, you know, it was cool to be in a building with a full building. You know, not a lot of masks going on, but in any case, just breathing.
Only reporters wore masks,
just breathing in a lot of people's air in that building. But anyhow, we got through it. And so I thought, you know, the atmosphere was fantastic. The setup, everything was great in terms of building up some excitement in the building. And but as far as the whole cup winning thing is that we had decided that in order to do the Canadians availability on Zoom, it would be better if we got out of the building because it would be late. It would be loud, I mean. And so you and I, just to share with our listeners, we, as soon as the cup is won and we watch the handshakes and the Canadians have left the ice, we bolt out of there and we go on an epic speed walk from the arena to our hotel. We're sweating by the time we get there. And it was pretty cool to be outside. There was fireworks going off outside Amalie Arena. Cars were honking their horns. It was a very festive atmosphere. And we managed to get to our hotel in time for the availabilities. And then, so we didn't get to fully experience the cup win thing.
The Gary Bettman not acknowledging the Canadians' run, which has been a story today.
Oh, really? Well, yeah, see, yeah. I didn't even know about that. So, yeah, because we missed all that. So, in any case, it was, you know, I mean, watching Brendan Gallagher on that Zoom was kind of tough, you know, like we're not supposed to be close to these guys or have relationships with them. It's supposed to be kind of from an arm's distance with these guys. But, you know, both of us have covered Brendan his whole career. You know, Carey Price talking afterwards, although Shea Weber kind of talked the way he always does, it didn't seem to be all that much different. But no. Watching Brendan Gallagher cry was difficult. You know, you see how much that these guys have invested in this and how much they believe that they could do it even at 3-0 down. And, you know, the one thing that struck me about game 5, it was, every player on that team probably has a play that was made in that game that they feel they could have done a little bit differently, would have maybe made the difference. And they're going to have to think about that all summer. Couple of months until the next season, but still, that's the tough part, is that they were so close. And Dominique Ducharme said it, we were so close, but at the same time, we were so far.
Yeah. It's weird though, because after all these years of the Canadiens trying to create a better team around Carey Price, making sure that the team doesn't simply depend on him as it did like in the mid 2010s, statistically speaking, from 2010 to 2017, he was the best goalie in the league with our Henrik Lundqvist, and he went on an amazing run, and he lifted that team's very ordinary editions of the Montreal Canadiens, and he made them like decent teams just by his own play. And the Canadiens tried to move away with that at the same time that he showed signs of inconsistency. And now the Canadiens managed to do a pretty good job at that, but you end up in these playoffs, and yet again, it's the difficulty of scoring goals that comes back to haunt them, despite all the additions, despite the fact that they added guys like Toffoli, Anderson, and whatnot. Even Corey Perry was known to score key goals in the playoffs. And that proved, despite all these efforts and despite the amazing courage that group displayed and belief in itself, it's the lack of offensive production that comes back to bite them. And so it's a little bit ironic, because I feel like this team is coming full circle. It went the furthest it has ever gone with Carey Price in net. It was a heck of a run, but you got to wonder if from that point on, where is this team going to go in order to manufacture more goals and be able to challenge, maybe not the Lightning, because I don't think that they're a player or two away from being as good a team as the Tampa Bay Lightning, but other better teams in the league, so that next year and the year after, they can try to become contenders and not give to anyone the feeling that it's somewhat of a fluke, as so many people thought it was this year.
Yeah, in a sense, maybe some people might see it as a fluke, and maybe in a way it was, but they did earn those victories, even despite John Tavares being injured in the first round and Mark Scheifele doing what he did. I mean, I don't know, they still swept them. Like, it was not exactly like Mark Scheifele would have prevented a sweep. And then they beat the Vegas Golden Knights very legitimately. And not just that wasn't a fluke. That wasn't only about Carey Price. That was a full team victory against one of the best teams in the NHL, arguably the best team in the NHL, considering they just beat the Colorado Avalanche. So, you look at the young pieces on this team, like, that's where the improvement will come from. Like, Nick Suzuki grew during these playoffs. Yeah. Cole Caulfield grew during these playoffs. Even Jesperi Kotkaniemi grew, despite the fact that his play was inconsistent and he got scratched at the end. It's still a growth moment for him at his age, just having turned 21. It can only be positive. And even Alexander Romanov, even though he didn't play that much, he got to play in the last couple of games. I thought he played well in game 5, better than he did in game 4, which was to be expected after missing so much. And so, that's where the improvement will come from. But it's interesting when you look at the series, like, the Lightning saw it as their last hurrah. They're going to lose guys. Probably Coleman, yeah. Gaudreau. There's all sorts of other cap-shedding moves that they're going to have to do to get under the cap and have Nikita Kucherov in their lineup next year. So that's them. And then the Canadians have this Philip Deneau situation. Obviously, Tomáš Tatar has played his last game in a Canadiens uniform in all likelihood. Who knows? Maybe Joel Armia's playoffs emboldens him to try and test the market and see how much he can make based on how he played. And so there are some guys that might. So I did feel like the load up for this year had to do with that Deneau's contract is up and there's, yeah. There's a certain amount of turnover that might happen here in Montreal. And so you wanted those young players to have this experience and improve from it. And that's, you know, they did that and they earned it. And it's not fair to call it a fluke, because it would be one thing, like it'd be one thing if it was like 2010, where Halak single-handedly beat two of the best teams in the league without much help from his teammates, aside from all the shot blocking and stuff that happened. But really, to win two series with barely ever touching the puck is not that. But that's not what this was.
No, absolutely not. All these series were legitimately won by the Canadians, and it was not luck. But when I talk about fluke, it's not in the sense that they were lucky to do it. I'm talking about the repeatability aspect of it. You know, the way things happen, the way that they made it happen, to which extent can they recreate that?
Well, that's what I'm talking about too. There are what has to happen for the Canadians basically is now they have this group of veterans that are pretty much set. And so the young guys that are coming and that are going to start coming every year from now on, for over the next 3-4 years, if they drafted reasonably well, they should be getting 1-2 guys who are ready for the NHL every year for the next 2-3 maybe even 4 years. And so those players slowly have to take the baton and become what's great about the Canadians. And so now that they've given this group of 4 young guys that opportunity to live through this experience and maybe be more impactful players next year, and then you bring in a Paling, and oh, you can add Jake Evans to that group as well, even though he's a little older, but still. And then you have maybe a Paling next year. Like maybe a Yolonen, who knows? Like, I don't know. There's guys coming, and there's guys who are going to be coming to Laval. And this is the stage of the soft rebuild, reset, whatever you want to call it, where that's where your contention comes from the draft. Whereas this team wasn't really that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
No, absolutely not. No, there's going to be a shift in that sense, but I fully recognize the fact that the young, talented players on the Canadiens will benefit hugely from this experience, and that's a given. On the other end, everybody ages by a year, and you've got other guys that for which, you know, there was some for whom it was a last hurrah. You mentioned the fact that we might see turnover on the roster. It's a byproduct not only of the guys that will have a chance to test free agency, but there's also the expansion draft coming up. We always pictured the fact that the Canadiens would protect 7 forwards and 3 defensemen, but looking at the way the playoffs turned out and how valuable both Ben Chiarot and Joel Edmondson were, If Marc Bergevin stays as GM and says, well, the proof is in the pudding that I was right all along to stay true to my commitment toward Shea Weber and Carey Price, I'm sticking with those two. Well, he's going to protect Weber too. So all of a sudden you're wondering, well, are they going to protect 4 and 4? And then then you got a guy you were mentioning, Jake Evans. Then he becomes vulnerable, maybe to be picked up by Seattle. Who knows? I feel like there are guys also that will need new contracts. Jesper Kotkaniemi won't get a huge raise, but who knows? Maybe it's an opportunity for the Canadiens to say, "We'll try to bank on the fact that statistically he's not quite to where he thought he would be after his third year, and we'll try to gain a financial advantage out of that." Who knows? But there's going to be many decisions, and that's not even to mention the Jonathan Drouin situation. So there's going to be a lot of turnover, I suspect, in a very short period of time, and that's going to be fascinating because, look, we're a day after the Stanley Cup was handed. We're July 8th, and in 3 weeks from now, we will have had the expansion draft, the regular amateur draft, and the opening of free agency. All within 3 weeks, it's going to be madness until then. So if people say, "Oh, nice, Arpin and Marc-Antoine, it's good. The playoffs are finished. You're gonna have some time off." No,
absolutely not. No. There is a lot of activity to come, and I think yesterday someone was like, probably not a whole lot's going to happen over the next week, right? Or like, nah, I don't know about that, because the expansion draft is gonna be preceded by, I think, a bunch of activity and trades and teams getting ready for the expansion draft. But I think it'd be wrong to just move on from this run and get. We have a lot of time to talk about the offseason, but I agree with you. There is turnover, and so to get back to the original question, the repeatability of this. Yes, there will be turnover, but there are key players that have been identified as important pieces and guys that didn't drive the bus. Like, I don't feel like anyone was consistently the guy throughout the playoffs. I think maybe Suzuki would come closest to that, but even he had a little bit of a lull at one point. I want to ask you, like, which player, like, really surprised you and performed at a level that you didn't think he was capable of in these playoffs?
Well, I think Ben Chiarot surprised me a lot, because we had seen in the bubble last year what he could do. But he didn't have a good regular season. And you could have thought, well, maybe that his first year in Montreal is just something that's it's a career year for him. But then even after a very ordinary regular season in the second year, he came into the playoffs, and man, was he ever a beast on the PK. Physically, I feel like he cut down on a lot of mistakes that he made in the regular season, in decision-making and in play with the puck. I thought, even knowing consciously what he did last year, and again, we got that theme of repeatability. Well, he definitely did it again. And at some point, I felt as though there were glimpses where I felt he was even better than last season. Of course, he played more games, so there were some of those games that where he stepped up even more. So I think he would be one guy. And honestly, Cole Caulfield, his level of comfort in such a hyped up atmosphere. I mean, the kid was at school 3 months ago, and he ended up playing the same amount of games with the Montreal Canadiens than he did with Wisconsin, and he didn't crack under pressure at all. Even though as playoffs went on, he was part of the opponent's game plan more and more, but I mean he did not disappear. He was there. He remained a threat every time that the puck was on his stick, and that's extremely exciting to see, because to me that's impressive to be able to realize that, and knowing that next year he's going to be a rookie.
Yeah.
So I would say, on the veteran side, I would choose Chiarot, and among the kids, I'll go with Caulfield.
Okay, yeah, that's fair, and I agree with you on Chiarot. It was actually his game with the puck that I was most surprised by. I knew that the defensive stuff he could do, but he really became a reliable puck handler. Like a guy, like with the puck on his stick, it was a positive more often than it was a negative, and was able to actually do some things offensively that we had seen in his first season in Montreal and over the regular season, but you know, not at all this season. And so that was one thing with Sherratt that really
except for a few games towards the end of the season when he played on the right side with Romanov on his left.
Yeah,
you know, no, at the time that Romanov was struggling, he sort of like where was that Sherratt all year round, you know? Yeah. And he was playing well with the puck during that period.
Yes, he was, but it, you know, it's not necessarily something he was known for. But I thought he did that pretty well in the playoffs. But my guy is Joel Armia, because we've never seen him perform that consistently for that long ever in his Canadiens tenure, you know? I mean, so that was surprising to me. And again, I always go back to this thing that Ducharme said about, you know, at the time, I think it was the Suzuki Toffoli line or combo or duo. And he's like, you know, the one common element, whenever a line is going well, it seems like Joel Armia is on that line. There's a correlation there. And wouldn't you know it, that stall line starts to become a factor as the playoffs go along. And who's there is Joel Armia doing Armia things. And you know, we had a couple of moments in game five where we looked at each other. It was like, geez, how does Armia have that puck out of that situation? And it was game after game after game. And he didn't do the disappearing act that's come to kind of define him, I guess, a little bit. Because he always shows the skill and he shows the toolkit and the package. And that's what makes him so frustrating, because he can't do it all the time. I felt he really did do it all the time in this sense. And that makes for an interesting decision with him as far as what he wants to do, what the Canadians want to do, if they can afford to pay him, how much is he worth, who knows. But I thought he had an excellent playoffs and from start to finish, and was really one of the guys whose play never really dipped.
It's interesting, but I think the Canadians are in a good position if they want to re-sign him, because in terms of comparables, in terms of selling yourself on the market, the thing with Armia, and it's a little bit the same idea that I mentioned with Kotkaniemi before, it's that the numbers aren't quite there. So the performance is, but when it's time to say, well he says, I determined that I think I'm worth X million dollars per year, well, he probably doesn't have a huge case when you look at statistics. So that part, I think, plays in the hands of the Canadians if they truly want to keep him, because he likes it here and they like him too. I think that they see a fit in the sense that he's a lot of the things that they're looking for in players right now, both in terms of you know, puck protection, size. He's got a decent amount of skill. He's very good on the PK, and they need guys to play effectively on the PK. I think that I can see that there's a fit, but he's not in the category, let's say, even though he had very good playoffs, he's not Blake Coleman.
No.
You know, he didn't have Blake Coleman type of playoffs where Blake Coleman can say, you know, I can shop around my 25 goal seasons that I had in Jersey, the fact that I just proved 2 years in a row that I'm a very good playoff performer, so show me the money. Joel Armia is not exactly in that same situation.
That's all I'm saying is that if the Canadians try to get him at an affordable number, let's say, and offer him security, like give him some term, like, I don't know, a 3-4 year deal if they want to keep him, in exchange for a lower cap hit, his playoffs does put him in a position to a certain extent to be like, okay, well, I'm going to see what's out there. I'm going to see what the market will bear for me. And maybe he winds up coming back to the Canadiens because he does genuinely like it here and probably doesn't want to leave. But, you know, in considering how he played, if I were him, I would be curious. I would be curious to see what's out there on the market, you know, and see what people are willing to pay. So there's that. Now, again, to go back to your initial question, we have to talk about Carey Price, because Carey Price, you know, has been waiting for this for a long time, and unfortunately for him, wasn't able to reach this stage in the real prime of his career, but played outstanding through the first three rounds. Had a not great start to this. Well, no, let's not sugarcoat it. It was flat out bad.
He had two bad games. The first and the third.
I would even say they could have used another save in the second game. They really, like, when they needed him, they couldn't get the. They were playing super well, but they couldn't get the goals. Like, they needed him in that game to keep him in it and to erase some of those mistakes that they made. So. Right. I think the first three games, he had a dip in his performance, to say the least, from what we saw, especially against Toronto, and then Winnipeg and Vegas. He was quite solid as well. So, for Price to come out and say, "I think I just wasn't good enough at the start of this series," as a way to sum up the whole series, just gives you a sense of what that guy's offseason might be like. I mean, he's not a guy who's going to dwell on it. He's not, you know, he does have an ability to get past things, which is why he's been able to survive in Montreal as long as he has. But still, that little interplay with him and Weber, to me, almost encapsulated, like, Carey Price's entire time in Montreal. Like, Carey Price saying, "I just wasn't good enough at the start of this series," and Weber saying, "I don't think that's the case at all. We weren't good enough in front of them." And that's always the calculation when trying to figure out how good a team the Canadiens really are. How much of it is Price? How much of it is the team in front of him? And this year, for the first time in Price's career, more or less, the team in front of him played well. Like, that Vegas series was not because of Carey Price. The Canadiens as a team outplayed the Vegas Golden Knights, who were President's Trophy contenders to the last day of the season. And so that's a game changer, you know? I mean, Price had never experienced that, I don't think, like, where he didn't have to be superhuman to have them get through a playoff series. And it happened to be that playoff series that got him to the Cup Final. Then he gets to the Cup Final, and he's not good enough for the first three games. Like, how do you reconcile that if you're him? Because he had a great playoff. He had a poor three games at the worst possible moment, and now they're Stanley Cup runner-ups.
To me, it's a fascinating story. There's a bit of tragic in that, I find, because if he's going to carry this with him, saying what could have been, you know, and think that it's his fault, because basically that's what he hinted to, that they didn't win because of him. That's what he's implying, which is, I find it nuts, because he said that at the end of a 1-0 loss. So it comes back to my first point, is that they still need to score goals. He needs to make the stops. He needs to bail his teammates out. And for a few games, he did not. That's true. But they need to score goals. And it's a perennial issue. And it's so strange, because we went through, like, the highs and lows of emotions with Carey Price. And, you know, with social media, we have constant contact with fans who give their comments and whatnot. And it's been like, it went from leave Carey Price alone, he's a star player, to he's no good, he's overpaid. Seattle won't even want to take him if we were to expose him in the expansion draft, to if they want to get rid of this guy, they'll have to pay an extra because he's got negative value. It went all across the board. And it finishes with him pretty much having reestablished his name as an elite goalie. Not quite the Vasilevsky level, not quite the level that he used to be in his prime, but still a very, very good goalie. So when I've been asking at first about the repeatability, the thing is, if they're not going to win with Carey Price, who's been so good in this run, is there an opportunity for him to win somewhere else? Or is there an opportunity for them to say, well, we've got a window to say, well, can we move him or we stick with him? But it's a very complicated decision, and it's a decision that the Canadians need to need to leave the feelings behind and try to be very rational about this. I trust that Carey Price is going to be, because that's always how he's been, but it's a difficult situation, and it's got to be resolved quickly. Not that it's a problem. It's not a problem.
I don't understand. Because they can choose what has to be resolved. I don't follow that.
Well, I think that no. The thing is, it's not a problem that needs to be resolved. To me, it's a window into I think that because of his good play, they have a window that's open to reconsider their mutual engagement towards one another, you know, and say, well, do we try to do this again next year and for the next few years, or we've reached a point where they say, well, you know, we went as far as we could, and maybe at this point we can try something different somewhere else.
Yeah,
because this possibility, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because this possibility was inconceivable before because of Carey Price's inconsistent play, his contract, and whatnot. Whereas I think that he proved to everybody that he's still a very, very good goalie.
Yeah, but all these things that you've mentioned, all this discourse, I'm not sure existed within the Canadians. It exists outside of the Canadians. Are you suggesting they should consider moving him, like while he has value right now? Because I don't think that's anything that they've ever really considered. And I think if they did, then this run would have squashed it. Like I just feel, you know, the problem with Carey Price is that we can remember the regular season not that long ago when he was not very good. And it's been several regular seasons in a row where he's not very good. But every time he gets into a playoff situation, he becomes someone else. So how do you move forward with that? Because frankly, in the division that they're going to be going back into, if Carey Price goes through months where he's bad, they're not going to make the playoffs. It's going to be tough. It's a tough division. I know the Lightning's not going to be the same team, but they're still going to be a strong team. The Leafs are still going to be a strong team. The Bruins are a strong team. The Panthers are a strong team. Ottawa's getting better. It's a difficult path to the playoffs next season. And it's great to say that Carey Price is a big game goalie, but you need him for the regular games too. You need him for the non-big games, because those games are actually big. Like the playoff race starts on day one of the season, the way the NHL is set up, you know, when 2-3 points separate the last playoff team from the like two or three teams that follow them. Like it's a very thin margin. And so I think being this close, if there was any doubt in either Carey's mind or in Marc Bergevin's mind, that it's been a race by this. And I'd be very surprised to see anything happen with Carey Price in this offseason.
Well, the signs that Marc Bergevin sent publicly for years is that, you know, Carey Price would stay as long as he remains GM. So it's probably this whole point might be moot, but you raise a good point in regards to the difficulty of just making the playoffs next season. And I think that, you know, this year the Canadians made the playoffs in part because of Jake Allen.
Well, not so, in part, almost entirely because of Jake Allen. I mean, you know, And also because of the division they were in. I mean, let's be honest. It was a tough division, but like Calgary and Vancouver, the Canadians made it so that they were very catchable. And both those teams just did not seize that opportunity to catch them. So, you know, it's strange to sit here and talk about after a Stanley Cup final and talk about maybe not making the playoffs. Well, look at the Dallas Stars this year. Dallas Stars did not make the playoffs. They reached the Stanley Cup final last year. And so there's...
Since 2012, there are four teams. Since 2012, four teams that reached the Stanley Cup finals and did not make the playoffs the year after. One of them is the Stanley Cup champions, the Los Angeles Kings. But otherwise, you got three finalists too. So it's not a given.
No, it's definitely not a given. But I do think, I think that Nick Suzuki is going to be a pretty high impact player next year, based on what I saw in the playoffs. I could see him putting up 60 points. You know, I think that's not outside the realm of possibility for him, and that would be a game changer for this team. They haven't had a guy like that in a long time. So there are signs of improvement from within. Frankly, Ryan Poehling's season in Laval should be very encouraging to the Canadiens. He showed some great things this year. You know, admittedly in a weird situation, not playing against every AHL team and whatever, but still, that's encouraging. That's a sign of growth. And so, yes, the veterans are getting older. Can Shea Weber survive a full 82-game regular season and then a playoff run of this length? I don't know. Can even Carey Price do that? I don't know, but I think Romanov's going to be a good important piece, a top four guy next year. Suzuki, Caulfield, as you mentioned, I think even Kotkaniemi is going to take a step. You know, he's a good player. He needs to find some consistency in his game, but the skill set is there, and he just needs to put it together. And I think he will, personally. So it's a bit different in that sense. You know, Dallas didn't really have, their young guys were Roope Hintz and, you know, Joel Kiviranta, obviously Heiskanen, who's a superstar, but it's
Gorianov.
Yeah. So it's the Canadiens have to hope that's going to be the difference for them, is that these guys take a step and become more impactful. And so that their depth is some of those veteran guys eventually.
Something that's going to be, I think, very interesting to see is that for the past 3 years, at least during the regular season, what's been the one constant, the one building block for them was the Dano line with Gallagher and Tatar. It's been extremely reliable for them. And come playoff time, you know, for two years in a row, they ended up having somewhat different responsibilities, different offensive results, Tatar being scratched. So definitely that line is at a crossroads, and they'll have to find something, a new combination that will provide the same sense of stability during the regular season. But even if they re-sign Dano and Dano Gallagher remains a thing, and they find someone else to complete that line on a regular basis, I think that they'll have to consider if it is now to be expected that come playoff time they're going to have that sort of role. Is it a bit of a fool's errand to say, well, because they've been producing during the regular season, we can expect that they're going to do the same in the playoffs? Because the reality is that there is a shift there, and you have to look for production somewhere else, mainly the Suzuki line. But I think that this is an interesting pivot in the way that the forward group is being built, because it's been labeled as the Canadiens' first line for the last 3 years. But if they come to a point where you got other people that step up and enable that line to be less than a first line, that could be interesting. But there needs to be some goals coming from other guys, you know, because it's even Gallagher, I feel as though so Dominique Duchamp said that he was injured. He had a groin injury during the playoffs, but I mean, he was hampered by the responsibilities on that line, and he was sort of anchored a little bit offensively, and it showed.
Yeah, I agree. That is something that they're going to have to deal with. I mean, you know, we're not even getting into the whole Dano contract here because it's so, I think that's an entire podcast episode on its own. so we will get to that for sure because it has to be dealt with. But you're right in the sense that that line has been kind of the identity of the Canadians for the last 3 years, where they set the pace, they establish the style that they play, and then it's back-to-back playoff years where that stopped being the case and where Tatar couldn't even stay in the lineup. So Tatar, I think it's a given that he's not going to be back. Dano, who knows? And then at that point, you have Gallagher, who you're going to have to slot in with someone else, and we'll have to see what happens. But I wanted to finish on just a note on, in your impression, what do you think this run did for the city?
A great deal of good. Man, that city needed that. It's I think we're the pandemic has created a stigma and a scar to a certain extent, and we see it because we just came back from Florida, where basically people are acting as though there was no pandemic, and here it's weighted heavily on people's shoulders and people's minds. And I think that the Canadians, their run arrived at a moment where there was finally something positive to rally people, to bring them together physically too, mm-hmm. not just in mind, but also physically. And you know, it's not a project. It's not a society project, but it was a social happening. And there's not that many of those anymore. You know, it's positive events, sports or not, just in any form. You know, just circumstances that make the masses be in communion together and share enthusiasm and joy together. There's not been that many of those. And if I just stretch this a little bit further and say, well, for a whole new generation of hockey fans, the Canadians got some runway on some younger fans now, because you don't have to talk necessarily about 1993 anymore, because there's all those who are under 35 can say, well, at least I've seen the Canadians reach the Stanley Cup Finals. I lived my team reaching the Stanley Cup Finals, and it was a thrill to follow them in that run. And I think that's going to that'll go a long way, I think, in the team's popularity. Not that it needed any more popularity in the city, but I think that it will reaffirm the bond and the I think it's great all around. Well, how about you?
Well, I think everything you said is extremely well put. I don't have a whole lot to add, except to say that when you say that the team didn't need any more popularity, and you're right, it needed some regeneration of belief. You know, it needed some regeneration where that younger generation of fans that you're mentioning, who's not really that young. You know, when you talk about someone in their 30s, that's a grown adult. You know, it's like it's and that person needed some reward for his or her faith in this team, and they finally got it. And this one somewhat magical run at a time, as you so well put, that where everyone needed something to be happy about and something to be excited about and something to look forward to, and to know that there's a game coming up tomorrow night, and that's what I'm doing tomorrow night. I have a plan. We can start getting together with my friends to watch the game. We can go to the Bell Center and stand outside and have this big sea of humanity all celebrating as one in a common way. It was just, it was a perfect marriage of something that this organization need from a hockey standpoint and something that the society needed from a societal standpoint. And in that sense, it's, even though they didn't win the cup and even though they've won 24 Stanley Cups, to me, this is one of their most significant playoff journeys in franchise history as a result of just the circumstances that surrounded it.
You mentioned, I'll close with this. You mentioned renew the faith in the team. I think the faith, belief from the players in their own means, in their own capacities is really what strikes me the most about this team this season. More than the skill, the hard work. I mean, you got to work hard to go far in the playoffs. It's not necessarily proper to the Montreal Canadiens, but the level of belief in, you know, clearly something happened before that fifth game against Toronto, and it's an impressive display of coming together that we saw, and to an extent, honestly, that I had not seen from the Montreal Canadiens, like, since I covered that team. To that level, to say we're going to squeeze everything we got out of us and nothing's going to stand in our way until something did. But, I mean, that level of belief was really surprising. And I wrote a couple stories on that trying to convey that idea. But it's, I think that when people say, they're done, they're over, it's over, whatever, and they keep thinking that they can do it, I'm thinking that's one of the reasons why they're the ones on the ice and we're the ones watching. Notwithstanding our respective talent in hockey, but also the competitive drive that these guys have, it's an ingredient that if you don't have it, you don't make it, or you will never play up to your capabilities. You'll never be the player that you can be, whatever the level you play at. But the level of belief that that group showed this year, to me, that's really what impressed me the most.
Yes. So on that note, we will leave you for now, but we will be back over the course of the coming weeks as developments, as we continue. We're Marc Antoine and I are shifting into off-season mode almost immediately. We're going to be starting to look at the Canadiens off-season, what the options are, the expansion draft, the draft, free agency, trades, all that stuff. We're going to dig into all the possibilities and come up with an off-season preview very shortly that I think you'll all want to read on The Athletic. And a reminder, if you have not subscribed to The Athletic yet, well, actually, first, I just want to say thank you to our subscribers before I go into that. Thank you very much for allowing us to cover this team, because it's your support, it's your subscription that allows Marc Antoine and I to cover this team. Julian McKenzie joined our coverage this year, did an excellent job providing game recaps immediately after the game. And it's all because of the support that our subscribers provide. And we thank you very much. For those of you who have not subscribed, you still can. You can go to theathletic.com/athletic support. Theathletic.com/athletic support. You'll get a discount on your first year subscription. You can join all the people that we just thanked and help support our coverage of the team, and hopefully enjoy our coverage of the team and enjoy all the coverage that all the writers across all sports offer on The Athletic for one low price per month. So we hope you will consider it. And with that, we will be speaking to you soon in French. I don't know when exactly. But we will be back with pretty regular podcasts over the next 3 weeks. As Marc Antoine, as we mentioned on this podcast, there's going to be a lot going on over the next 3 weeks. So stay with us, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye-bye, everybody.